and then Mrs. Amy Stewart, Mrs. Alice Donahue, and Mrs. Jesse Rollins, and Mr. Jim Wood, and they'll be speaking on education then and now. And you go ahead, whichever wants to start. Okay, you can start first. And after everybody's spoken, there'll be a questionnaire after everything.
Well, good afternoon, boys and girls. Very pleased to be here. I'd like to start out by telling you about education around the year 1934. In the province at that time, there were three main kinds of schools. One of them was the Little Country Schoolhouse, and Mrs. Donahue has provided this a number of figures. I wonder if I can just one full story of the country school.
Is it your country school? Could you show them?
Well, no, I could show them from Lake, but these are country schools. You may have seen one or two of them still left. If any of you come from out to the northeast, you'll be to Park View. How many have been to Park View? Also, if you've been out south of town here, you might have been to South Athabasca. And that, anybody been to South Athabasca? These are two of the schools that remain here. I don't know how many more, because most of them were hauled away to form schools in towns nearby. Well, then there were ungraded town schools at the Red Brick School down here in 1930. There were five classes in all of grades 1 through 12, or 1 through 11. There wasn't a grade 12. Because the principal only had grade 11, and they had about two grades in each room for three grades 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, 7 and 8, and 9, 10 and 11. And so you can see that back then there were no schools in which you had one grade in a room. It was always more than one grade. And in the city schools, they had some schools where they had one grade in a room, some with mixed grades, and that sort of thing. Now, in a country school, you would have grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Maybe there'd be no grade 8, like there was in my first school, but grade 9. You start all those grades at one time. You would have maybe two or three students in grade 1, a couple in grade 2, three in grade 3, and so on. You might have 40 students in a school, and you might have as low as 20 or 21 students to teach. And at the end of the year, you had final exams in grade 8 and grade 9. And these final exams were marked by the Department of Education. They were sent out, they were in a closed envelope when you got them in June, and you had to open that envelope right in front of the students. Everything was just so. And so examinations, final examinations in grade 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. These examinations lasted for 1.5 hours in grade 8 to 3 hours in grade 12. You start writing at 9 o'clock on your history exam, for example, and 9 o'clock in the morning, and you would finish at 12, unless you finished before you finished the exam. Some of them were there in an hour. Now, these country schools were located about 3 or 4 miles apart, all throughout the country here. You go down the highway, like the one here to Boyle, and every 3 miles you come across a country school. And one thing I'd like to mention about these country schools is the fact that they were not linked by roads. They were linked by dirt tracks. There was no gravel. There wasn't even any gravel on the highway between here and Edmonton. The highway that we're using at the time was the one down over the hill here. I don't know if I'm pointing in the right direction. I guess it's down this way, the highway down over the hill there. And there was only about half a mile of gravel at this end on that road. The schools were heated by a gasoline barrel, in some cases, turned into a stove with a chimney that went up and ran the whole length of the room. And quite often that chimney would fall down in the middle of the class on top of your student's head, and you'd spend the remainder of the afternoon getting the chimney back up for the school full of smoke. My first school was Plum Lake, about 7 miles this side of Boyle. And we had a wind problem there. When the wind would start going from the west in the fall or the spring, the chimney was too short for this roof. And so the wind would blow the smoke against the roof and then back down the chimney. And the stove would just work like a smoke machine. And the smoke would come out. School would fill smoke. It was a call a holiday. So about twice a year, until the end of the chimney, we had a holiday in that school. Another thing that we had was school inspectors. Instead of a superintendent, there would be a school inspector come around and visit your school. And I remember one, he roped like a chicken's tracks. We used to call them turkey tracks. And we couldn't understand his writing. So one day after he had come in and put a bunch of writing on the board and asked us to answer the questions, then he marked the papers and threw his chalk across the room. He said, "Great hell, teacher, your kids don't know anything." Now I remember that remark for 50 years, word for word. So you can see the effect it had on me. We were all scared stiff of the school inspector, and even the teachers were scared of him because we often came in a bad mood and
That was Mr. LeBlanc.
You shouldn't name names. The poor man is dead now. W.O. Mitchell tells a story about a country school and school inspectors. In the afternoon of a hot day in May or June, the children came in to find the teacher asleep at his desk. So they tiptoed in, not to wake him and start him giving him work. They tiptoed in, took the places, sat down, and were busily saying, not making any noise. In walked the inspector. He knew just right away what was wrong. The teacher was asleep, the children were being quiet. So he put his finger to his lips, and he said, "Go on home." So they left, and he sat down to wait for the teacher to wake up. Well, the day was hot, the flies were going around there. He fell asleep. After a while, the teacher woke up. He saw what the problem was, so he tiptoed out and left the school inspector sleeping.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Wick. Ms. Rollins?
Do we have to stand up?
No, you don't have to.
Last of all, just remain seated. And good afternoon, boys and girls. I can remember, don't think any of you have experienced this, but Mr. Wood, to get his education, walked from south of Athabasca to the school in town.
3.5 miles.
Yeah, 3.5. That would be cutting through the shortcuts in the bush to get him. Get the education. There was no such a thing as a school bus in those days. If you can go after the walk, there was a school bus. And when I started in the Brick School, there was just 3 rooms open at that time. The school had a decreasing population, and so there were several grades in each room. And then, as I can remember, one of the big events in our lives, Muriel Shoemaker received the Grade 8 Honors Award. In those days, I think it was in the province. And an Athabasca student had won one time and moved all marks to see Muriel presented with that flag. That was a great event for a small town school like Athabasca that was students, and only 10 awarded in the province. Other things that I remember was the old stove or furnace that we had in the old brick school. It was far from warm and comfortable like we have it now. There was no such a thing as lights. Apparently there had been gas lights years before, but for the 30s, the gas lights had gone. Was trying to get out at recesses and noon hours to haul cordwood. Now, the farmers paid their taxes in almost every district by hauling cordwood to the school. Yes. And so that was stacked in the way about this side of where your swimming pool would be now, because those were all spruce trees in there, solid spruce. And the board would not allow the town to cut, or the school to cut them. So the boys, mostly boys, and sometimes girls at noon, would have to carry that cordwood in order to have ability to school. Now, for playground, they would go down to where, I guess, the flower block is down, because they weren't allowed to cut the trees in that area. We used to play hopscotch, I can remember, and in the wintertime, do a bit of sliding. And the boys, of course, as of now, would tear off the swimming pool, sand the beach, you know, for the. Now, when I began to teach, my first school was Silver Fox, which is out in. That school was burned later, but they had rebuilt it, which was a school, and the only place I could live was in those two little rooms on front, which had been, in better times, co-rooms, the boys' co-room and girls' co-room. I can remember the day my dad left me, which was about the last of August. I had just turned 18, and he left me there. Well, and I was so happy to get a school, because we couldn't get schools, and we couldn't move to a decent school until you had had some experience in the outlying schools. I had 49 pupils, grades 1 to 9, and after school I helped with grade 10. You know, students who were here. The students, I had no, there was no such thing as money. I was a sixth teacher to the old. So, I got $15 on Halloween, $25 and then after that, the government took over, it was 1989, and gave us $25 a month, which was a good, we thought was a good sum to be getting a regular check, and we were happy and glad to have it. Now, to me, that was some of the happiest years of my, the two happiest years of my life for me. I really enjoyed my classes, and it seemed like they had no money, but they were thankful for everything they had. There was no such a thing as a radio, even in the community. Newspapers are very scarce. I had to get them to bring newspapers and magazines to cut out letters and words for the good ones. You have no idea, we just had no books to work with. Then I can remember in 1939, when things got a little better, they began to gather up books and send these boxes of books around. You get a gray box of books, and somebody had to go to town. Those old gray box of books would come, and the kids were so pleased. And they would read that box with the books in there, all the dilapidated books that few people would think of, until the next time somebody exchanged the box of books. Mr. Wood spoke about superintendents. I also had Mr. LeBlanc when I went to it, and I can remember his ears stuck straight out like this. And it was a frightening experience for the teacher and the students. We had no idea when he would come. We must all stand, good afternoon, Mr. LeBlanc. That was essential. You people just sit to the superintendent out there and carry on as usual, don't you? But in those days, we must stand and bow. And anything students did that was out of line, the teacher was in trouble for that. And I can still remember him writing on that blackboard. But when I began to teach, Dr. Schmidt was my first superintendent, and I was a little happy, and I think, or he was just leaving me. But he had been the teacher before, and he knocked on the door. And she was a young teacher and didn't know who he was, and he said, "I'm Swift." So she said, "I'm not so small, Michael."
Thank you, Mrs. Rawlings. Mrs. Donahue? Oh, Mrs. Donahue?
I don't know whether there's much left for us to do.
Just pull
out of all that. Maybe I'll take a picture of Mr. Wood. This is back in the 50s. The Buckingham were not allowed to go downtown. And the junior room was down at all, at the house. And of course, they cut the cake a lot, so we didn't have anything to do with downtown. One day, some of these bigger ones decided to go down and be cool. Teacher was called, school called, and there must be something near a room missing.
There were high school students missing.
Yeah, right. We just walked downtown. The room, opened the door. Yeah. They just got their shoes in the back door, and they were up looking for the door. They got back up there. They were already back. Because it was, I wasn't allowed to go downtown. And he bought chicken, so they were
Skippers.
Oh, was it at noon hour or did that?
No, no.
Yes, that was in the, that was at Brick School, right.
Yeah, it was during class.
It was in that drawer when we were on.
Yes, something. Isn't that right? Well, my first school, I thought that was a two new school back in, yeah, no, it was a 2 miles straight up here. And the thing that I remember making about the course of studies, what we had to teach, we had to teach here, particularly reading, composition, history, nature studies, art, citizenship, and physics, and music only if the teacher wanted the teacher. We didn't seem to be compulsory in those days. But one thing, the grade ones had to know all accommodations and separations. None. The two, they had to know them to 17. And grade three, they had to know the tables and accommodations. And no one could go on advanced to another grade. I mean, knowing all these other people and looking at facts. And that's the way it was written, because they want, they don't have to do that. But, so by the time they reached grade six, they knew all their fractions and their measurements. Now, the teacher had bought, his library was really good, too, and he didn't buy a little record book. The record book was not supplied by the private school. Now, at one time, the department sent out exams for grade one through to grade seven, and then people were told that they're going to department in grade eight. And they had to pass every subject. It wasn't the case to pass one subject and then carry in one thing. Year. And I think the children benefited from this long day at school because they could hear what was going on in the next class. And then when I came in, we were still, of course, we didn't have places for those days, and so we did, but I did have a gown like that. They wanted us from the school to the memorial, to go walk out from the school. And the bathroom is, of course, very outside. And then when I came up here, I went up to Fair Haven's teacher. Now that was they made it into a two-room school. Mr. Alfred Brown, who's the doctor and everything now, was my principal. And they took the coal shed and remodeled it for his high school. And he taught the high school there. Now I went every day from Athabasca, and I would walk 2.5 miles, and then I would ride to Richard's, the other 3 miles. And we would travel by a two-wheel car in the summertime, and I did it for the summer. Have a flying box cut because the bug witches were driving. He got a bunch of gel down from the field, and it was good. So we really want to try to ride. Well, so that didn't happen. Now, the janitor was one of the people who ran on first, and he didn't all get to school on time. And so we would get there and have to stop the fire. Well, that was and we were on a whole day. And that was the sort of the barrel school. It took great big long logs to be in school. And then, they couldn't pay us. I got $25 for first Christmas, and I thought it was a Christmas present. And I was talking about Mr. Gorman, I said, well, I have a Christmas present, $25. He said, that's your salary. And so I didn't get money anymore. It'd be about 2 years I missed it. And then they wrote and said that they would, if I would get to pay 10% cut, they would give us all the money. He looked into that. And I said, oh, I see. But some did take the 10% cut because they were free. And Pizza Store and Pottery Store were left without credit. And Mr. Jim Alley, as the same as me, they just didn't pay him. And I remember it was a big deal that he had it. And we used to go around, we were on a library committee, when they packed up these boxes of books, the gray boxes that Mr. Alley was talking about. Mr. Appleby and I were on that committee. And we went up and he was picking up this old car. And, you could see the ground down low. There was no footboard. And we'd ride the cones and climb these stairs to some room up there. And there we'd have a meeting. Now we didn't, and we had a biennial. There were no people in the station like they have today. And I belonged to the ATA. I don't know. So I was at 5 years chosen. Who was it now?
Okay.
They didn't even have a good ball team, I remember that. And I'm a part. You know, this is I was in grade one, one of my beginnings, and he was a backpack, you know, a backpack here. I never heard of a backpack, but he would stand behind the capture and chase these balls. And he was in grade one, and he'd always come late to school. I said, "Well, Arnie, what do you do?" "Well, I'm chasing those balls, you see, because they might be so they wouldn't."
Okay, thank you, Mrs.
Donahue.
Mrs. Stephen?
Well, I didn't teach truth to tell them a good deal of what was going on, but there's a few things that I would like to mention. When I was going to the Red Brick School, Bascom and McQuaid, we only had three teachers. And when I was here in the school, they didn't have substitute teachers. And last year I was at school, one of the teachers was away. I was very often to go down and teach the other room. And I remember going into the classroom, Jesse's or Mrs. Rawlings' classroom at different times. I found her when I was still up in grade 11. Mr. Wood was mentioning the pupils that he had in his school. He mentioned he had about 40. I was in one school up in the not too far from Grand Prairie. In fact, it was still when the railroad first went into as far as Hyde that I was teaching at there. And second year I was there, I had 53 students, all the grades from 1 to 9, and I had 7 beginners that year, and they spoke 7 different languages. Now, if that was a challenge for a teacher, I believe I found it. But there was one thing that we found. You do a little mental arithmetic on that. With 9 grades and 8 periods a day, I had 72 lessons to prepare and teach every day. Now that meant work. And with that many grades, you have, and your 35 or 40 minute periods, you had less than 5 minutes per grade to teach, or the time that you were actually teaching them. And so you would possibly start with the grade 1 children and give them their 5 minutes, and then you would give them some support, or you'd have them, you'd have their arithmetic on the board, or their phonics or something, and they would be working at it. And very often, if you knew that they were going to be finished a little bit too soon, you would give them what we call number cards, or letter cards. And instead of writing in their books, they did hunted out the numbers and the signs, the addition, subtraction, multiplication, or whatever signs they had, the equal signs, and they did all their work by lining them up with these number cards. And then you'd go on to the next grade, and so on. And it was surprising, even with that many children in the classroom, there was very little noise. When one class got finished with their work, if they children would notice, some of the smaller children were having difficulties, they would just quietly get up and they would go over and help the little children. And the others would sit in their seats and listen to what you were talking and teaching the higher grades. In that way, a child from grade 3, by the time they got into grade 8, they had, over the years, really assimilated part of grade 8 education. For the same thing for 5 years. So it was much, it wasn't nearly as difficult for them.
These guys have to leave, I guess.
Or they have to leave, or something.
Well, you guys can stay for a couple of months.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they were talking about the different schools. One school I taught in, it was the old Naval School. And it was sheet metal on the inside and sheet metal on the outside. And one day we had a hailstorm. Now you can imagine how you could teach 27 children with a hail pounding on top of a tin roof. It was quite something. Some of the teachers, and here mentioned how the teachers were always scared of being stuck. I have known teachers that when the inspector, they saw the inspector coming in late at the schoolyard, they would have the children put all their books in their desks
They would clean out the driveway. And when the inspector arrived in the school, there wasn't a thing to be seen except children sitting in their seats.
Thank you, Mrs. Stafford. I don't know if they'll be able to hear you, Mrs. Shoemaker.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Thank you for sitting in at this session.
Yeah.
What kind of software do you use?
I don't know. I just, well, you know, it's interesting, you know, and you're sort of going over here.
Come on, up front, please,
and see the picture.
Hey, come sit right now. Okay, thank you for all coming to the session today. And this is Mr. Jim Wood. This is Mrs. Jessie Rawlings, Mrs. Alice Donahue, Mrs. Amy Stewart, and Mrs. Mariel Stafford. Sorry, and Mrs. Mariel Shoemaker. And they're going to talk about education then and now. Okay, Mrs. Shoemaker.
They made me go first this time because I didn't have her last time.
She's trying to make me feel bad.
I can remember my first week at school. You know, it's like walking in the doorway and there's this great big upstairs building upstairs. And at the very top of that hall was this great big grand block. And I don't know, it just seems so huge and so big. Maybe it was because I wasn't that big myself. When I started school in Athabasca, the big school down there, there were three rooms that were in use, there were four rooms all together. And by the time I had finished grade 11, five rooms were being used and one room was in the basement. Now I can remember one day, this wasn't useful in those days, it's the American Union. But we didn't wait for the teacher to ask to tell us about it at all. We just all got up, jumped out of our seats and ran around and got some stairway over, and of course the teacher ran out there with us too. And the high school, grade 12 wasn't taught there, but there were grades 9, 10, and 11 taught in the high school. And there were about 30 or 35 of us, and I can remember when we were graded for examinations, like we were doing regular examinations and report cards. I can't remember how many times a year, probably three or four. And grades 9, 10, and 11 were in that room. One week, and when we were graded, it was according to our average. But if there were 35 of us, it didn't matter whether you were in grade 10, 9, whether you were in grade 10 or 11. You got the highest average when you used the service, like 30 or 4 average, you would use the report. Now, I looked at my grade 8 diploma, 1929, that is a little old. And these are the subjects that were on there. Now, you people know what to take in grade 7 now, and you know what to take in grade 8. Well, this is what we, what the subjects were that I was marked here. English literature and spelling, one mark. Grammar and composition, another mark. History and civics and geography, another mark. Arithmetic and rapid calculation, another mark. And then agriculture, art, physiology, and hygiene, another mark. And you see the choice of subjects is not as great in our debate as it is in yours. Now, here are the subjects that you could take if you were, as they are marked on my grade 12 diploma, 1934. English, literature, 4. English, composition, 4. History, English, Literature, 1. History, 4. Algebra, 3. Geometry, 3. Trigonometry, 1. Physics, 2. Chemistry, 3. Biology, 1. Latin, 3. French, 3. German, 3. Or music, 3. Now, with the subjects that I took, I took 29 units, and of those 29 units, three of them, I received credit to the principal. But the question went on at that time, and we were very, 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 very poor. And I wanted so badly to be a teacher because when school ended, I didn't know what I was going to do because I wouldn't be at school any longer. And I just had to offer the school because I loved school. And when it took some decision and committing in order to get enough money to go there, go to the normal training, and then of course, now to find a job. If you were looking for a job,
there were maybe 70, 80, 90 applications for my job. What chance did I have? No experience. So anyhow, I looked in the other room, boredom, and I answered these experienced teacher wanted. So I didn't thought I was going first. I wanted to know how to be and I was so happy the job was mine if I wanted it. And you know how I got that job? Well, there was a school board of 2 members. And it was a one-room school, which some of the other teachers will tell you more about than I will. And there was a bachelor on that school board. And he had a wife. And so that is how too late that year, Mel. You didn't have first choice. And I guess, according to my letter, I must have sounded very experienced and very much like you. Oh, this would be a good And so when I got there, well, then I asked him out, and he told me, well, Ralph came to see me last summer, and it had been over 40 years, like in 1937, so it was 40 years that I had seen him. But he did get a wife through me because I had a boyfriend at that time. I put him on a guest. And so when I told Ralph, I see her friends, he used to go, oh yes, I didn't tell you about when how we met me at the station. I get off, you see, at the station, it's very lonely place. Lots of wood and just no houses there except maybe a water station and another station around the train station. And so the people that I was going to work with were there, and then there's this great big man. What I noticed about him is this whole big hidden body, this coat was like there, and his pants, you know, were up there, and I was kind of funny. But of course, he's on the skateboard, so I didn't do much. And I remember him taking me in his horse and in the yellow mat that he had, or above me, you know, I call it that. And took the pony a long way around. I didn't know whether I was safe or not, but I guess I was. And in the salaries now, the others mentioned the other students that they taught many times and never got paid. I was lucky. I got paid every month, $60 a month, $600 a year. I had to, the janitor worked too, and I got paid $2 a month for the janitor. And there was a lady that there were three people who wanted me to board at that place. Well, I had to choose one, and I did it before I came there. And so one of these people was rather cross, these people, because I had chosen them to board. And so she used to watch the smoke every morning. And if the smoke didn't come out an hour before school, well, I got reported to the school.
Thank you, Mrs. Shoemaker. Mr. Wood? Mr. Wood, can you speak?
Do you want me to speak now?
Yeah.
We're going down this way.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay. Well, Mrs. Stafford? Okay.
Now, Mrs. Shoemaker has told you some of her experiences when she's going to school and when she started to teach. Now, she referred to how she got her first school. Now, it was usually a teacher was going to a country school and the lady teachers usually stayed. They married a bachelor farmer, and they stayed there. And then the centralization came in. The little one-room schools disappeared. And the poor bachelors stated that was when they couldn't get a wife. And so there are a large number of bachelor farmers in the country today because there were no teachers to marry. At one school that I taught in, I lived in a room in the back school. And it wasn't a very comfortable room. The outside door was shut. It was held shut with a piece of wire. And there was a gap about so big. And this gap stayed there summer and winter. And when it got to 40 and 50 below, it was quite a chore to heat that little room where I lived. But that year when I was teaching at that school, there were 13 bachelors within a mile of the school. But I never married any one of them. And out of that school, it was a fairly new district. The railroad had just gone up
200 at the time.
And that there was the school districts were extremely large. And in the morning, the children would get up. There was no school bus to pick them up the gate. Many of those children walked 4 or 5 miles to school. In summertime, sometimes they would come to school on horseback. And we'd have old 10, 15 horses tied to the barn at school or tied to the fence poles. And often the whole family would come on one horse. I have pictures somewhere, I didn't have time to hunt them up, of 6 children coming to school riding one horse. And in the wintertime, they used to have homemade sleighs similar to stone boats. They just had a log spur on it. They would be about 4 feet wide and maybe 6, 8 feet long. And they had one horse with down in front, some boards across, and a little plank along or a log along the side to keep a little bit of straw in. The children used to sit in there and drive to school. If there was fresh snow, they had a real problem. They were having fight snowballs all the way to school. The horses would kick snow up in their faces. And it would, you know how children will fool around. Very often one youngster would get pushed off the way and the horses would be galloping along. And by the time they got the horse off, the little fellow sitting back in the snow had quite a walk to catch up to the others. But they got there. And another thing that was quite interesting at the time was the fact that there was no, they couldn't go out in the hall and turn off the tap to get a drink of water like you do. Water, especially in the Peace River country, in the Grand Prairie country, was very, very scarce. It was hard to get water of any kind. And if you did get water, it was so foul tasting you couldn't drink it. So anybody who had a good well and had children going to school that used a horse and a stone boat or a little sleigh would bring be appointed to bring water to school. And they would bring water in a 5-gallon big can. Then you had your own cup. You were supposed to have your own cup, but like children, everybody didn't always use their own cup. And there was the dipper in the cream can, but we'd get their cup off the wall, hang on the nail, take the lid off the cream can, dip out their cup full of water, pour it into their dip into their cup, and have the drink, put the lid back on, hang up the cup, and away they would go. It wasn't anything like what you people have today. And the Mrs. Schumacher was talking about the salaries. I seem to be one of the lucky ones. I was teaching school a few years before she did. And I always managed to get into a school where I got $1,000 a year. I never taught for less than $1,000 a year. And that was in the early years of the Depression. But there was one school that Tom had back in 1929 and 30, it was there. And I didn't get paid. The times were so hard, I didn't get paid. And I moved to another school out in town, Parker School. And while I was at Parker School, I got married. And as the rule at that time, if a woman teacher got married, she lost her job. If the school board decided whether they would keep her on or not. If they really wanted her to stay, they would ask her to stay. Well, they kept me on for a year or so after I was married. And then one day, about 1939, I got a letter from a school board from the school I had taught up in near Grand Prairie. And inside this envelope was a check for all my back wages for 1929 and 30. It was gone, but I did manage to get it. In other words, Mrs. Schumacher didn't mention the workload that we had. In the school I was telling you about, I had 53 children in one room, all the grades from grade 1 right to grade 9. And with 8 periods a day and 9 groups to teach, it meant 72 lessons to teach every day. And with periods of 40 minutes and 8 or 9 grades, you had less than 5 minutes per grade to teach. So how many of you could assimilate the work of one lesson in 5 minutes? And that year, with these 53 children, I had 7 grade 1 beginners. And they taught 7 languages. Not one of those beginners could understand what the other one was saying. So we had quite a time there. And referring to the equipment you have in your gym and your playground equipment, we didn't have any of that. And, well, this was before I started the school, and I was going to one of the one-room school. I'm at school in a Galicia settlement. Now, many of you have never heard of Galicia. It was a little country between Poland and Russia, and it changed hands during the First World War, and was taken, the map broke up, and Galicia disappeared. But these people couldn't speak English, and we had with no playground equipment. We used to play games such as Sheep Pen Down, Tom Tom Polaway, Farmers in the Dale, London Bridge, tags, different kinds of tags, and so on. And if we wanted to play baseball, we had no balls. What are we supposed to use? Someone yesterday suggested we use a stone and a stick. Well, it was easy enough to go to the bush and cut a stick for a bat. But the ball was harder. We couldn't use a stone because it was dangerous. So in the spring, you know how the cows begin to shed their hair. And we would start, as soon as the cows began to shed, every one of us would start making what we call a hairball. We'd comb the hair off the cow and we'd put it in our hands and we'd roll it round and round and round and round and round. See how hard we could get. And this was the one, it might take us 2 weeks to make a good ball in our spare time after school. And if you could roll it so that it was really hard, it might last a week. See why we all have to make balls? If you couldn't roll it real hard, it might last 2 days if you were lucky to play baseball. And that's what we use for baseball, or play ball. The lunches at the schools in that school were, a few of us had very good lunches, but these immigrants from Central Europe, they used to use a heavy rye bread. We used to call it black bread. And it was. It was a real dark gray in color and a real strong flavored bread. And some of us would have nice lunches. And I remember one day, we had, I had some of my favorite foods in my life. And I was sitting beside another one of these Galician girls. And at noon, and we decided we would create lunches. And when we created lunches, we never looked inside to see what there was or what we had. And my lunch was in a little large pail. But I had no one, so I just handed her my little pail without taking it on. She handed me her newspaper parcel. She's a newspaper. And I opened it up. And here was a piece of black bread. about that big rock. And in the middle of that, just slapped into the middle of it, had been a tablespoonful of black strap molasses. Now any of you that have eaten molasses know what it tastes like. And the bitter taste of the molasses with the bitter taste of the bread taught me a lesson. Be careful who I traded lunch to.
Thank you, Mrs. Stafford. Mrs. Donahue?
At my first school, my grades 1 to 6, and I had 40 pupils. Principal had Carol Brown, who was a student. Now these male teachers, mostly teaching the ladies, because for many years teaching as a stepping stone and professional education. The other profession. They didn't all stay in the teaching profession. The subject that we taught in those days, and this was at grades 1 to 6, reading, arithmetic, composition, penmanship, geology, history, nature study, art, that was drawing and pictures and bold, music, gazette, health, and spelling. Now in grade 1, they had to learn all the combinations and preparations to 9. And in grade 2, they learned the combinations and preparations to 17, and come to 5 complete. And by the time the child reached grade 3, they knew all their capabilities. And no child was promoted from one grade to another until they did know. So we didn't have
before the distributed housing grade seven, they would ask, well, what do the teachers, what do the other teachers teach you? Because they knew that they had come up to a standard and they set that to the top of their education. Our libraries were pretty good. The teachers had to buy all their own breakfast. And then the teacher was expected to go to summer school and come out. The grade 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13, I know. But they did, at one time, they did a cotton did send out exams for every child from grade 1 to 7. But the teacher could use them if she wished, and she could see them. And the school, it was still in the middle of the school, and there was outdoor coming that time. And then when I came to Athabasca, I taught in the middle school, there were just two rooms there. And it was so dark, couldn't start at 9:30, it would be pulled up in the winter time, so that's when you have to move the story to go on and help and see what happened. And from the special school, I went to those two little schools, I went to the, above the shop building, where Mr. Richard was the shop teacher, and he had all the knife and sauce and dust up there. I taught them with the teacher, and he could draw the there also. And then I went down to those two schools, down to the United Mission Church. Now, they only have the bathrooms were not very good, so once again they decided that they should build bathrooms with several compartments to put those in. But we still had just cold water in the field until they finally got on the other cold ones and there was our friends. So I think that's.
Thank you, Mrs. Donahue. Mrs. Rollins?
Well, I don't know if you can make that clear. When I started school in the school, when it's easy, there has to be 4 weeks, but times were high, so they did without teachers and as much help as they could. Gaining is a teacher married during her term, she was immediately fired, and our principal did marry the big one teacher and she lost her job immediately. There were no substitute people, as you will know now, and I can remember Mrs. Thacker coming. She was up in high school and she would come down and be our substitute because the teacher was sick. They always chose the high school girls and or boys, and of course there were two students in the class in high school. Your high school only went to grade 11, so I can remember. Another thing that I remember vividly was the fire brigade. The fire broke out in town. The high school boys turned out, and I think down by the old fire hall, they have a whole two-wheel cart, and there was a long hose wrapped around, and they would try to put up with some fire hydrant. And the high school boys often had to have a bucket brigade to put out a fire in the town. But he would be called right to school and ready for fire. I can still remember the bells from the big school. You could hear for miles. The first bell, which was 15 minutes before, and then the last bell, 5 minutes before. And I can remember years later when I quit teaching, I could hear that. It was really a reminiscent sound, a sound that you feel almost lonesome. Now, when I first went to teach, and we talk about school today, it was a real struggle because there was so little for you that the only aim in life seemed to be if you could get through school that you could have something. Because I can remember scrubbing not floors like this, but a board floor for 5 cents on Saturday. And I can remember when I wanted to go to school, there was no grade 12 after that. And they opened up the normal school. You people would go to Canada when we were in. Well, they were opening up the school in Edmonton. And if you had your grade 12, and we're 18, you could go. Well, you could go if you were younger than 18, and you had to read them. And the only chance I did have an uncle in the city. And I went there, and he took me in, and I stayed there until I was 12. In what is now Eastland. I went to Victoria School, that's where I was to go. And then it was overflowing, so they sent me there. And here I was a strange kid from the sticks who'd never been to the city. And the gym emptied, and here I was standing alone. I didn't have a clue where to go. I didn't have a clue about changing teachers, where you have more than one teacher, but you have maybe 3 or 4 years with the same teacher, you know, 3 or 4 days. Well, I can still remember what a hard struggle that was just to find the very classes and to get organized. and to use facilities. I'd never known what a library was. I think those are some of the things that I remember. Now that when I went to Phoenix School, my first school was Silver Fox. This is here. And I was so happy to get it. I think I just turned 18 and I came in August and my dad took me out there and left me in this place here. Two rooms in front were my room where I stayed. And that originally in better times being a boys and girls program. There was no rail, I had to go a quarter of a mile to walk. We packed our wood, big cordwood, in the old barrel store. I can remember how cold it got in the winter, and we moved our desk around the stove in the morning, and then as it got warm, we moved our desk further back. We were responsible to have dances to raise money for the Christmas concert, because that was the one big deal in the year. And of course, they all came and brought their children and put them on my bed. And we made lunch. It seemed like we had a good time. And then the orchestra with George and Mary Sauer. And this was incidentally George Sauer's Foot Evermore. With the fiddle and guitar. I can remember the children, their lunches were, there just wasn't much. And they would bring their lunches and cocoa they would bring and heat on the stove. I can remember I didn't know any better, but the first one came and they put the lids on the cocoa and exploded with all of the tears. So Silver Fox had cocoa stains for years. Then later we started, they would bring beef bones, even from when they butchered, and we would get the pot of soup. So 3 days a week we would have soup, 1 day a week we would have cocoa, or 2 days a week cocoa. I was fortunate to be a staff from the shoemaker. I signed up for $500 a year. And I got another penny till Halloween. I guess I was lucky I had a good dad. Then I got $15. At Christmas, I got $25. And that was 1939. And the government took over there and gave us $25 a month. So I was the sixth teacher that that school had owed. And they had people around there that worked off their taxes by boarding the teachers. So the only way I could, place I could possibly board would be mine, you know, from the school. But you were so thankful to get a school and so appreciative, and the children were so appreciative. I can remember the little large bales of sauerkraut and tomatoes that they brought in the fall, eggs, you know. So I don't look on those as unhappy times. I can still remember, as I said, trying to wake up the newspaper so I could cut the words out for the little ones to learn to read. I went to the Stratford, a number of them spoke different languages. And you had the grade ones as well as the grade nines. And the grade ones, you tried to start with them. And the grade nines, they were going to have to write departmentals when I was in school. And so it seemed like the neglect of the middle grade. They had to depend on, you know, what you could give them, when you could give them. Because you stressed the first two grades and you stressed the last two schoolwork. You just never got around to those four fours and fives and sixes. There was no such thing as books. And I mentioned that when 1939 they consolidated and they brought those gray boxes of books around in places that were a little bit off and exchanged. I think, and drinking cups, they made paper cups. Remember how they fold a piece of paper and made paper cups? Very few of them had one. You know? They did that for me in the brick school when I was there too.
Thank you, Mrs. Stories, Mr. Whitfield. Oh, okay. Thank you for coming over. You see, like, I don't know when to stop you, so I guess what you could do is...
Thank you. I'll just start out by giving a resume of what education was like in the province before 1930. Even back to the beginning of the province, they had had country schools built. As soon as there were enough pupils, I think it was something like five pupils, you could get a country school. And of course, the people built these country schools themselves. In these country schools, they had grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and sometimes 9. All of those were in one room and one teacher. You would have a couple of students in grade 1, a couple in grade 2, 3 in grade 3, 4 in grade 4, 1 in grade 5, and so on. Now, you might have 27, you might have 22, you might have 40 students. I left the impression of the last people that I had 40 in my first school, but I had about 27. And all the grades from 1 through 9 were grade 8 missing. Now, besides country schools like that, and the others will tell you more about their experiences in country schools, there were ungraded town schools. Now, these schools usually had more than one grade in each room, and that's why they were called ungraded. In 1930, in Athabasca, there was only the red brick school for the whole of this town. And in that school, there were, I think, either 4 or 5 rooms, depending on whether they were using the south basement as a room. Used it some years and other years and used it. So you would have grades 1 and 2 in one room, grade 2 and 3 in the next, grade 3 and 4, grade 5 and 6, grade 7 and 8, and then grade 9, 10, and 11 in one room. All of the high school grades were taught in one room. There was no grade 12 because the teacher himself did not have grade 12. In the cities, they had much the same types of schools as you have here now, except that they wouldn't have a big college school like this one. In the country schools, you would find heating a gas barrel, usually, although some of them had a water burner, like South Africa, they had a water burner heater. But most of them had a gas barrel turned into a stove, sitting on metal leg, with a stove pipe running the length of the school, and once in a while that stove pipe would fall down. It ran the length of the school to give heat to the school. It would fall down, and then you'd have soup and pipes all over the children. You'd have to pick it up and put the stove pipe back together. And that was one problem we had with smoke. Another, in my first school, I taught at Plum Lake in my first school.
Your time is just about up.
And here it is, here. Pardon?
It's just about up, your time.
My time is just about up, my goodness. we'll forget about that. I'll just say that there were departmental in grades 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Written exams, anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours. There were school inspectors who came to the schools, and we have some stories to tell you about them. The roads were not blacktop, they weren't even gravel, they were just mud track. So that's all I have to say. We'll let someone else there.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Mrs. Rollins?
In referring to the stove pipes, I can still remember the long string of stove pipes across South Alabama School, and when they caught on fire, and turned red, and you wonder whether you really lose the school or you win. Also, when it rained, and the black soot always ran down, you know, leaked all over the floor, and that's the stove pipe, you'll never forget. And that was the same, too, and I came to teach.